Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello, you're listening to On Israel in Al Monitor. I'm Ben Kaspit from Tel Aviv. A few days ago, U.S. National Security Advisor Jack Sullivan visited Israel. The visit was considered a success in terms of easing tensions between Jerusalem and Washington. From his discussion with the Israelis, it appears that the two sides are not so far apart in their assessment of the situation. More precisely, the American take on the faltering attempts to move ahead in negotiations with Iran on its nuclear program is very similar to Israel's take. The differences, which aren't major, lie in the question of what should be done if the negotiations collapse. A senior Israeli security source told Al Monitor last week that in this regard, the Americans are in what he called a state of strategic embarrassment. Sullivan's visit put an end to an unofficial White House boycott of the Prime Minister's office in Jerusalem over the leaked conversation between Secretary of State Blinken and Prime Minister Bennett earlier this month, which Israeli media described as tough. According to Channel 13 News, President Biden failed to return Bennett's call for several weeks in order to get back at him for using Blinken to score domestic political points by presenting himself as refusing to give in to the American pressure. For now, the approach advocated by defense and foreign ministers Gantz and Lapid seems to be defeating Bennett's approach to relations with the U.S., which is clearly influenced by his former patron Benjamin Netanyahu. The Americans punched Bennett on the nose, a senior Israeli official admits. Now everyone is even. This source adds that Israel will continue to argue and even fight with the Americans behind closed doors, but would outwardly maintain unity because, as he says, we are all in the same boat and Israel doesn't have any other America. Today's guest represents the militant approach. We'll call it the Netanyahu approach on what Israel should be doing regarding Iran and ties with the United States. Reserve Brigadier General Yossi Kupervaser is currently director of the Project on Regional Middle East Developments at the Jerusalem Center. He was formerly Director General of the Israeli Ministry of Strategic Affairs and head of the Research Division of Military Intelligence. Kupervaser recently got back from a round of talks in Washington, and he joins us right after this short break.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Hagedorn, and I'm the State Department correspondent at Al Monitor.
And I'm Joe Snell. I'm Al Monitor's video editor. Let's admit it, this past year has been difficult to stay on top of the news and sift through what's accurate and what's misleading. Let Al Monitor help you.
If you care about the Middle East and North Africa, you should consider listening to Al Monitor's audio series On the Middle East with Andrew Parasoliti and Amber Nzimon, and On Israel with Ben Kaspi. You can now watch our newest video podcast, Reading the Middle East with Gilles Kapel. You can subscribe to these series on your favorite podcast platforms.
And through a host of free daily and weekly newsletters, we offer a range of perspectives with the highest journalistic standards. You can subscribe to these newsletters at almonitor.com.
As an award-winning media service headquartered in Washington, D.C., Al Monitor has a network of over 160 contributors around the world.
So if you haven't done so already, be sure to visit almonitor.com, where you can find all of these newsletters and podcasts, along with first-class reporting and analysis.
Now I'm very privileged to say hello to Reserve Brigadier General Yossi Kupervaser, who is currently director of the Project on Regional Middle East Developments at the Jerusalem Center, and formerly Director General of the Israeli Ministry of Strategic Affairs and head of the Research Division of Military Intelligence. Yossi Kupervaser, thank you for joining us, and shalom.
Thank you, Ben, for having me. It's my pleasure.
So let's begin with the question that I'm asking all my guests here, most of them. What is the preferable option, in your view, among all those on the table right now? A return to the original Iran deal? A more limited agreement of less for less? A pointless status quo? Or a collapse of negotiations?
Well, unfortunately, none of them is a good option from Israel's point of view, in my mind. And the option that should have been on the table, which is a better, longer, stronger agreement that guarantees that Iran will not be able to produce nuclear weapons in the future, is not right now on the table. You're right. So out of the options that you put in front of me, I'll take the option of the collapse of negotiations, because this brings us back to a situation where Iran is trying to get one nuclear bomb and has in front of it a very dangerous threshold that it has to cross on its way to having this one nuclear bomb. The way to having it today is better and easier than it used to be 10 years ago when we last dealt with such a situation. But it's still a problematic way that they have to cross in, on the way to having this first nuclear bomb or first nuclear device. And in this respect, I think it's very, very important to understand what is the real meaning of the other options. The option of going back to the original JCPOA is much more dangerous because it allows Iran to reach eventually in 10 years from now, maybe even less, a situation where there's no threshold and it has enough fissile material to produce a big arsenal of nuclear weapons, up to 100 or so nuclear weapons at a very short period of time. So and that being done with Iran enjoying a lot of money that enables it to become the hegemon power in the Middle East, even before it has the nuclear weapon, and has the entire capabilities necessary to produce this nuclear weapon, be it from the point of view of enrichment, be it from the point of view of the delivery system, the missiles, that the agreement doesn't put any limits on Iran's capability to produce them, and be it from the point of view of weaponization, because we see that Iran is making progress on weaponization as we speak. And I'm sure that the Iranians are have made quite a considerable progress in dealing with the challenge of weaponization, which was the major challenge that the crash program back in 2001 to 2003 was trying to solve. So it's I'm quite afraid of this idea of going back to the JCPOA as it was. The lesson less for less is even worse, because it means that Iran will be able to enjoy all the benefits without taking upon itself the limits of that at least exist in the beginning of the JCPOA. So it's even worse than that. And the status quo is dangerous because what Iran is doing in the status quo and ongoing negotiations is that it uses it in order to accumulate big amounts of 60% enriched uranium or 20% enriched uranium, which makes it very easy for it to cross into several bombs within a short period of time. So they are trying now to use this status quo in order to, and they're saying, we are not going to cross the 60%, but they are going to accumulate a lot of enriched uranium of 60%. And we all know that the difference between 60 and 90 is very short.
You say they are earning time. By the way, they announced, I think during the weekend, that they're not going, even though there is no agreement, for the time being, they're not going to enrich uranium more to a level more than 60%. But I know it's very easy to come from a 60 to 90. And I hear from our experts on our side that actually in the enrichment issue, they are already there. It's now just a question of a decision. They have to decide. But I want to ask you something about something that you just said. And I heard it, that they are making progress as we speak in the issue of weaponization. And I know from my sources, and it's not only me, that the weaponization issue is stuck, that they did not make the substantial jump that they did in the uranium enrichment. So are you sure that right now they are trying to make a breakthrough in weaponization?
Yes, well, first of all, what I can speak about is what they do, okay? And we all know that one of the things they're doing right now is producing uranium metal. They take it from uranium enriched to 20%, not 90%, because they don't have officially uranium enriched to 90%, but basically it's the same process. So for the first time, we know that the Iranians are producing uranium metal. Now, there's no other purpose for which people would produce uranium metal without, except for producing nuclear weapons. So obviously, this is something that is a critical process that has to be done in the context of the weaponization. And they are doing it openly right now. And nobody says anything. I mean, everybody says something, but nobody really demands them to stop it. So it's they gain experience and tackle all kinds of problems that can emerge when you do that as we speak.
So secondly, I'm glad we said it. Secondly, okay.
Secondly, there is no, according to the JCPOA, and definitely not now, there is no monitoring and supervision over what the experts, the scientists are doing. So I'm sure that this is what they're doing right now, because producing uranium enriched to 60% without at the same time making some progress on the issues of weaponization is simply stupid. And I wouldn't dare to blame the Iranians for being stupid. So I'm sure that they're doing it right now.
But don't forget.
We probably don't know about it.
Don't forget.
We don't have any means to follow what these people are doing.
Don't forget
and
that.
Thirdly,
yes, okay.
And thirdly, look, what we learned from the archives is that there was much activity regarding the weaponization that we were not aware of. And we cannot even today say what was exactly going on there. We know about anthropogenic uranium found in Turku's Abad and in Abadé, two locations that were not disclosed by the Iranians at the time, and never, as a matter of fact, until we find the archives. And we know that there was much, much more progress done in Parchin beyond what we knew that was taking place over there with the detonator that they were checking in Parchin. So we know that they were dealing with this idea of weaponization back then, and they're probably doing, not only probably, they're dealing with it right now.
And so
I'm sure that they make progress.
If I try to analyze what you just said, as a senior intelligence officer formerly, and an expert, that it's a lot more difficult to follow and to get intelligence about weaponization than about the uranium enrichment stuff. But on the other hand, you do not forget, but I want to mention that they lost their major scientist, Fakhrizadeh, the founding father of this whole weaponization program. So maybe this is something that is causing them a delay. So I hope so, but I want to proceed and ask you, in light of the fact that the U.S. administration is not keen on engaging and is distancing itself from warmongering on Iran, what policy should Israel adopt? If you were a head of intelligence these days, what advice would you give to the prime minister, defense minister, and foreign minister, Bennett, Gantz, Lapid?
Well, fortunately, I'm not there, but yes, I would say that it's not about being warmongering. It's being committed to protecting Israel from very dangerous threat in the future. And the way to do that is as much as we can with clandestine activities and cyber activities. Of course, we should do that in order to slow down the progress that the Iranians are making and prevent them from getting the capability to produce nuclear weapons. That's the most important thing that we need to do, because here's the big difference between us and the Americans. The Americans, most of the time, sometimes they say the right thing, but most of the time they say that Iran should not have nuclear weapons, and they would not allow to have nuclear weapons. But for us, the important thing is to prevent Iran from having the capability to produce nuclear weapons. We don't want to wait until after they have the capability and then pray that they would not use this capability in order to produce the weapons. That's why our time to work is earlier than the time that the Americans probably would like to take action. And because of that, we have to do that now. Now, to do it with a kinetic activity is problematic right now, as long as they don't cross a certain clear red line that, and we have not even declared of any specific red line, unlike we did in the past. So it's very problematic to do that right now. I think that therefore that what I would advise is to take any preparations needed in order to be able to take the kinetic action when necessary. And in the meanwhile, to take other options like, as I said, clandestine and deniable actions so that the project will be slowed down.
Things that, according to the foreign media, we're doing more than 20 years now, and I think I think that we succeeded. You know, Israel is trying to fight the nuclear Iranian project since 1999, and maybe before, and they still don't have it. So maybe it's a success. But I want to ask you about the criticism that is being voiced in Israel in recent weeks over militant and boastful declarations by senior security figures. It started with the new Mossad chief, Dedi Barnea, and continued last week with the incoming Air Force commander, Tomer Bar. In an interview he gave the mass circulation Idiot Achronot paper. On one hand, this boasting is unnecessary. On the other hand, since no one else in the world is willing to place a military option on the agenda, and Israel is the only country in the world actively fighting Iran these days, maybe these declarations do serve some purpose.
I think they do. I think they there in order to make everybody take into account the possibility that Israel will take military action or other action against the Iranian project. And this is something that everybody has to take into the way he analyzes the situation and what positions he adopts. In the past, for example, like 10 years ago, we were asked actually by the Americans, and some people think that the situation is very similar today, that we were asked by the Americans to go to China and to explain to them that if they don't support the pressure on Iran, Israel will be forced to act, and then it will be against Chinese interest. I think the situation is very similar today. I think Russia, China, definitely the Europeans, when they look at Israel preparing itself to such an operation, showing its self-confidence in the success of its operation, they have to take this into account. And regardless of what is going to be the real result of something like that, they have to take into account that Israel is going to act. And if it does, the implications of that on the stability in the Middle East and in the entire world are going to be immense. And that's something that has to be taken into account. And I think it should be taken by the account by all the players, including Iran. So we see how the Iranians are reacting with the threats of retaliation and so on and so forth. This is totally expected. And but they have to take into account that Israel will not remain idle if they make progress and get closer to having the capability to produce nuclear weapons.
Aren't we too late to block Iran's nuclear program? According to Ehud Barak's definition, last decade, the Iranians are already deep in their what we call immunity zone, as we call it, meaning that their infrastructure is spread out all over their huge country and they have already acquired the know-how. Would you already define Iran as a nuclear threshold state?
You know, the threshold is not one thin line. It's a space, and they have already entered, I would say, the threshold space, but they are still in the beginning of it. And I think that we can still have an impact on the program because it's a link. And if you find a weak link, then you can have an impact on the program, and then you can deal with the other elements, you know, that comprise the entire system. And I think that we are it's becoming late, but it's not too late. And as I said, they're already in the threshold area, but they've not crossed the threshold area, and we still have time, not much. And yes, what they're trying to do right now, as I explained, is to get themselves deeper and deeper into this threshold zone. It's by accumulating the 60% enriched uranium and accumulating the 20% enriched uranium, they are getting there. Let me remind you that in 2012, when Netanyahu was speaking in the General Assembly of the United Nations with this very famous chart, what he said was that if the Iranians are going to have 250 kilograms of uranium enriched to 20%, for us, it's going to be a red line. So he didn't say that we have to wait until they have 90% enriched uranium. They are very close to the equivalent of that line today. And much has changed since then, and Israel doesn't look at that today necessarily as a red line. But we are definitely inside this area, this zone, in which the Iranians getting closer to the point where Israel cannot wait any longer.
Some in Israel, especially those associated with the defense minister Gantz and maybe even foreign minister Lapid, are saying that Israel must be careful not to make Iran an Israeli problem. Gantz says Iran is first and foremost a global problem, then a regional one, and only then an Israeli one. Do you agree?
Yes, it would be great if the world would have taken upon itself the mission of preventing Iran from having the capability to produce nuclear weapons. And it should have been like that. And the world doesn't deny that it has a responsibility here. And this is why it's not Israel sitting in the room. It's the EU the EU plus three plus three. Or the P5 plus one. But the problem is that the feeling of everybody is that these guys are not going to go to the extent necessary in order to actually prevent Iran from having the capability to produce nuclear weapons. That's what's at stake. Definitely not the regional powers, but not even the international powers are not going to do that. And if Iran decides to move in this direction, and it already decided to move, it is moving, and nobody is going to do anything, then it becomes an Israeli problem, because the Iranians don't hide their intention to hit Dimona and to hit other targets in Israel. So we have to take it to take it upon ourselves to take care of this problem. I can tell you, I was in Washington a couple of times recently, or in the United States a couple of times recently, one of them in Washington. The message I heard, and I heard it also publicly just in the last day from Senator Reich, is that eventually Israel will have to do what it has to do to protect itself, because we cannot wait forever for the Americans to do it. Now, of course, there's much negotiations and deliberations going on between Israel and the United States, and the last visit by Jack Sullivan here, the National Security Advisor, all of these negotiations are very important. And if we reach some agreements about what are the points that will make a difference in the future, then, and we can convince the Americans to take upon themselves this responsibility, it would be great. This was the dream back in 2012 that didn't materialize. And this is a dream again now. If it's going to come true, I think right now the chances are still low that it will come true and that the United States will take it upon itself. We have to remember, in the past, there was some understanding between Israel and the United States that Israel will take responsibility for threats emanating from nearby countries, Syria, Egypt, the Palestinians, but second tier countries like Iraq.
Second and third.
Third tier countries like Iran will be dealt by the Americans. What happened was that in 1981, we came to the conclusion that we cannot count on the Americans and we had to deal with the Iraqi reactor ourselves. And now it turns out that even Iran is not something that we can count on the Americans to take care of. And we have to prepare ourselves to the capability, develop the capability to do it ourselves. For Israel, as a small country with less than 10 million people, this is, even though we have a great military capabilities, great military capabilities, I think it's something that is really extremely consuming the resources of a small country like ours, and yet we have to do that.
It's I think it's stunning. You just said that you heard from senators, American senators, that eventually they assume that Israel will have to do what it has to do. In other words, to take care of this threat by itself.
Has to do what it has to do.
okay.
They didn't say that we have to take.
By the way, you see, we're just talking about the declarations by senior Israeli officials in military officials, but and you see, the Iranians are retaliating with here. This is our plan to bomb and destroy Dimona. So it's not a one-sided warmongering war. They are in the other side as well.
Sure, I think everybody understands that one of the reasons why it is becoming so expensive to prepare ourselves, and so difficult to prepare ourselves for the eventuality of confrontation with Iran, is because Iran has used the time just like we did. We bought the F-35 and other stuff, and developed the David Sling and the Arrow. Upgraded versions of the Arrow and so on and so forth, prepared ourselves to such an eventuality. So did they. And what we see today, for example, the battle in Syria is a battle between two sides that are trying to prepare themselves to the confrontation if it erupts in the best way. And we are trying to prevent Hezbollah from having more precisely guided rockets. And the Iranians are trying to push these capabilities to Hezbollah again and again and again and again. In spite of all the efforts that have failed, they keep trying. So it's definitely, everybody understands that if we end up with a confrontation with Iran, it might not be only the capabilities that Iran has and that were showcased recently by the Iranians in this last exercise. It's not only these exercises, these capabilities, but also the capabilities Iran has given and provided its proxies in Lebanon, in Syria, in Yemen, even in Yemen, definitely in Iraq.
In Gaza.
In Gaza. We have to take all of these capabilities into account. It's not going to be an afternoon walk.
We're not going to have any fun in this if it happens. Finally, I want to ask you, Yossi Kupervaz, how do you see events unfolding in the Middle East if and when Iran becomes a nuclear power or a nuclear threshold state, in light of the massive funding Israel is allocating to this project right now? Do you think Israel can recreate a real military option that would significantly delay the Iranians who are already on the verge of nuclearization?
First of all, as you said before, we have delayed this program for quite a long time. For quite a long time, when I was head of research division in the intelligence in 2002, and I presented the program after we managed to have enough pieces of the puzzle to say this is a military program, our assessment was that if nothing goes wrong, they will be able to produce a nuclear weapon within 5 years. It's, as you said, it's been now almost 20 years and they have not yet produced it. And by the way, we didn't know at the time that their plan was to have five bombs, actually four bombs, and one for testing by 2003, namely a year after we presented this this program. So it's so definitely we gained a lot of time since then. Can we prevent it from materializing in the future? I think we can. I think we still can, but it's becoming more and more difficult, as you said. And look, coming back to your first question, how is the Middle East going to look like if they manage to? The Middle East is going to be much, much, much more difficult, and it's a difficult place as it is. But it's going to be a much more difficult place if Iran manages to gain the capability to produce nuclear weapons, because in my mind, once they gain the capability, they will produce it. Because they're going to be vulnerable at that time, and that's why they, in my mind, are going to use it and use the capability and produce the weapons. And this would mean a regional arms race, and this would mean much more tendency, much higher readiness of the proxies of Iran and of Iran itself to use force against Israel and the other moderate countries in the region. This is a very dangerous situation, including the possibility of threatening the to use the nuclear capabilities against Israel, which is something that they did in the past in 2003. Rafsanjani did that. So it's not something that we can rule out, and we have to take this into account when we assess what are the best options for Israel.
Yossi Kopfhauser, it was a very interesting conversation. And thank you very much again for joining us here in On Israel in Al Monitor. Toda rabba, Yossi.
Thank you.
We are going to take a short break and we'll be right after it with some final thoughts.
Hello, I'm Gilles Kepel, professor at Sciences Po and the Normal Sup in Paris, and author of a number of books and articles on the Middle East. Through my new podcast, Reading the Middle East, on the award-winning media service and Monitor, we will take a deep dive into the trends in the region with the authors and thought leaders who are shaping how we think about the Middle East. Reading the Middle East will be a fantastic addition to Al Monitor's outstanding podcast lineup, including On the Middle East with Andrew Parazziliti and Amber Inzamam, and On Israel with Ben Caspit. You can subscribe on your favorite listening platforms. We look forward to your joining our conversation.
Thank you for staying with us. Few very interesting headlines from this conversation with the Reserve Brigadier General Yossi Kupfervasser. First of all, I asked him about the boastful and militant declarations by senior security figures in Israel, the head of the Mossad, the incoming chief of the Air Force. And I asked him, and maybe these declarations do serve some point, some purpose, if no one else is putting this, what we call a military reliable option on the table, we have to do it. And actually, Yossi Kupfervasser agreed with this thesis. He said that there is an advantage in these declarations. And he said that in the past, the Americans used the Israeli war mongering, I think he meant 2010, 11, 12, in order to affect or to press China, Russia, and the Europeans, and then they were able to put the very heavy sanctions on Iran, and we are talking on the previous leg of negotiations before the JCPOA. When I asked him about the options, the relevant options right now between the United States and the superpowers and Iran, he said that he preferred an option that is not on the table, which is getting a longer and stronger agreement. But he agreed that this option is not in our menu. So from the whatever we have on the table, he preferred the collapsing of negotiation, and maybe then heading to a new line of sanctions and the renewed pressure on Iran. The most interesting thing, he said, that during his last tour of meetings in Washington, he heard from senators, I think he mentioned Senator Rich, that eventually Israel will have to do what it has to do. He did not want to go into details, but when you say something like this, you mean that you are on your own and the Israeli military option is the last resort, and there is a chance that we will have eventually to use it. I asked him if Iran is already a nuclear threshold state, and he said that it is becoming late, but not too late to stop it. The Iranians are close to the red line of becoming a threshold state or to the threshold area, but they did not cross this red line yet. But as he said, they are getting there. And talking about red lines, he mentioned the red line that Benjamin Netanyahu issued in one of his speeches, I think, in the United Nations in 2012, when he said that the Israeli red line is when the Iranians will hold 250 kilograms of 20% enriched uranium. And right now, said Yossi Kopervasser, they are already there. What they have is equivalent to this red line. So I think they're crossing red line after red line, but they did not reach the real red line yet. I hope you found this conversation interesting, and I hope to find you here next week, the same time, the same place, on Israel, in Al Monitor. I'm Ben Kaspit from Tel Aviv. Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.